I had asked several questions last week, and I'd like to ask those questions again, because I didn't really address myself to those questions. I want to ask those questions again. I want to ask some more questions and answer those questions. And that'll sum up, that'll actually end last week's shiur about Adam Rishon. The first question is, what exactly was the Nisoyim of Adam Rishon? What was his Nisoyim? What was the conflict? What was going on in his mind? Bishas, he was tested in terms of eating of the tree of good and evil. Eitz Hadas, Tevara. What exactly was he undergoing? The second question is, that which Adam Rishon was undergoing, is that his peculiar conflict, his peculiar Nisoyin, or is that somehow a prototype of every Nisoyin that every individual goes through? Is that a universal conflict? The third question is, Chazal say that Adam Rishon min hoyo, that Adam Rishon was an atheist, a min. What exactly does that mean? It's very hard for us to understand what it means by Adam Rishon min hoyo, that Adam Rishon was an atheist. What exactly does that mean? We, of course, know that Adam Rishon was not an atheist. So what does that really mean? The fourth question is that the Yetzer Hara, who is represented by the Nachash, exactly what was its method of tempting Chava and, of course, Adam? What method did it use to do the actual temptation? What was the actual side that it presented that would try to get them eating from that tree? The fifth kasha is that the way the Yetzer Hara tempted Adam Rishon previously, is that merely peculiar to Adam Rishon? Is that really the way he tempts everybody? The same modus operandi, same method of conduct, the same way he operates. Is that a universal method of operation? That's the fifth kasha. The sixth kasha is, what exactly is meant by Eitz Hadas Tevara, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? What did Adam not have before the Chet? He didn't have this tree of knowledge of good and evil. He didn't have the knowledge of good and evil. And now what does Adam Rishon now have? What knowledge of good and evil does he now have after the Chet that he didn't have before the Chet? The next question, the seventh question, is that how does this tree give Adam Rishon that knowledge? Was it something intrinsic in the tree? Was it something outside the tree? How does a tree give Adam Rishon that kind of knowledge? Especially when Chazal say that it's a machlokes, if it was a fig tree or whatever, when obviously that kind of a tree is a regular tree. So the question would be, of course, is how did the tree give him that knowledge of whatever he had attained? And the eighth question is, how do we see all the shurim? Until now, I've given all the shurim on the requirements of Olam Hazeh, and also on the entire psychic apparatus of man. How do we see all that culminating in Adam Rishon as making it possible for him now to do either a mitzvah or a chet? How do we see that? Those are eight questions, and I want to try to answer all eight questions based on the principles that we learned last week, and of course on many ideas presented previously. Now, the question of what was the Nisoyin of Adam Rishon. We begin to see that what the Nisoyin of Adam Rishon, what that was, again, is what we've been greeting the whole time. His Nisoyin was to believe in himself as a true being, independent of the Ribbono Shel. That desire that he had to assert or confirm himself as a true being, besides the Ribbono Shel, was his Nisoyin. Adam Rishon has a taiva. And what is that? To somehow experience a feeling or a belief of self. And he's presented with a wherewithal. The Nachash comes over to him and says, look, I have a terrific way that you can be like God. Ve'yisim kelekim. I have a terrific way. I will show you the source of power that the Ribbono Shel got, his, you know, it's the source of power that whereby he got all his powers. And therefore, you can also be like God. In other words, you also can be a true being in your own right, completely independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You will exist in your own right. You will be a true cause, as you really will be able to get things done. The cause will be, you will be the cause, not the Ribbono Shel Olam. You will be a real power besides the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is what the Nachash is saying to him. And that was his temptation, tremendous temptation, to be a real being besides the Ribbono Shel Olam, to war with God, to displace the Ribbono Shel Olam with itself. This is the perpetual Nisayon, or this was the Nisayon of Adam Rishon. And of course the Nochash addressed himself to Adam Rishon in first Chava that way. Yisim Kelokim and so on. Ki Yodei, if the Rosh knows that on the day that you eat it, your eyes will be open and you'll be able to create worlds like Rashi says and so on. So this was the Nisayon of Adam Rishon, to be or not to be in that sense. To be a real, true being independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam, or not to be that. And of course, Adam Rishon had that desire, that urge to be, to affirm or have a feeling of self independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam. This was his insight. On the other side, he was supposed to realize that, first of all, with his own chokhmah and the fact that he was created after everything was presented, that he was created after the world was here, he should have realized that the tree is not the source of power of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The tree is not an independent being existing outside of God and giving power to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Number two, that there is no alternative direction eating from the tree. There's no such thing. It's not pshat that God is telling them don't eat from the tree because my way is superior. There is no other way. And if the tree is there, it's only because God himself created an alternative direction that you should think exists by itself. And therefore you should say, well, there's a good way and a bad way. There's God's way and there's also eating the tree. The truth is there is no bad way, there's no other way. And that is your nisayon. And you have to realize that there is no other way than what the Ribbono Shel Olam was mitzava. And if there looks like a negative way, it's only because God himself created that negative way that you should realize it's nothing, reject it, and choose only toiv. So you should have realized the second thing, that there is no such thing as an alternative direction of eating from an Eitz Hadas Tevara. That itself was created by the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the third idea is he should have realized that he is not an independent being, a being on his own right, a self, whereby he could say, I want to do what I want to do. I want to assert my will, and that is to eat from that tree. He should have realized that also. In other words, instead of realizing Yeshoy Mavadoi, he should have realized Enoy Mavadoi. This was the fundamental nisayon of Adam Rishon. And unfortunately, of course, for himself and for all of mankind, he didn't. He chose to choose the direction of Yeshoy Mavadoi. He believed in Nochosh, that there's something to he himself. And that was the chet, that he believed himself to be somebody independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is what his nisayon. And that was his chet. Next question. Is this the prototype to all man? Is this the universal nisayon? And the answer is yes. The universal nisayon is always, do you think you're somebody, therefore you want to do what you want to do, and not do the mitzvahs of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Or do you feel really that you're really nothing? There's enid mevadoi. Like Moshe Rabbeinu said, v'anachnu mo. What are we? Nothing. Therefore you will do the tzivui of the Ribbono Shel Olam. In other words, are you going to say Enoid Mavadoi and therefore do the mitzvahs, do his will? Or are you going to say Yeshoid Mavadoi, do your will because you also exist independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam? That is the fundamental nisayon of all human beings. It exists every time you are confronted with a nisayon. But of course, as I'll show by the Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Hara gets you, he leads you down different roads to fall into that nisayon. But the fundamental drive in man is to be an independent being. That is the fundamental nisayon of all. And that's exactly what Adam Rishon had. What he had is no difference. No different than what all human beings have every time they're confronted with a self-assertion, assertion of their will versus an assertion of the Ribbono Shel Olam's will. Period. That is the nisayon. And that is a universal sign for all men. Now we understand what Chazal mean. When Chazal say, Adam Rishon Min Hoya, that he was a min, we understand not that he was a min. There's two things. There's a halachic min where somebody believes, for instance, that there's more than one God, or he doesn't believe in God. These are all atheistic, right? Some atheistic beliefs. In other words, whenever you negate some aspect of the true nature of God, you are a min. That's what a min is. A min is that individual that negates, conceptually, that's what a min is, some aspect of the true nature of the Rabbeinu Shlom. And since Adam Rishon negated the aspect of the nature of the Rabbeinu Shlom of Einei Mevadoi, he chose to believe that he was something also, therefore he is saying Yesh Einei Mevadoi. He's negating some true fundamental aspect of the Rabbeinu Shlom, therefore he's a min. So therefore what Chazal is saying is that Adam Rishon Min Hoya, that the Nisoyin involved the concept of Minus. That's what the Nisoyin involves. Are you going to negate the fundamental aspect of the Rabbeinu Shlom of Ein Eid Mevadoi, and you're going to believe Yesh Eid Mevadoi? And that fundamental aspect of Minus is present in every Nisoyin of every human being that lives. Adam Rishon Min Hoya, Kol Adam Min Hoya. Every person is a Min whenever they do connect the Rabbeinu Shlom. Because what they're really feeling and believing is that they are somebody independent of the Rabbeinu Shlom, and they therefore they can live in accordance with their will. So Adam Rishon Min Hoya means that the fundamental conflict was an issue over Minus, not Halachic Minus, because it's not that Adam Rishon believed that there was no God, Chas v'Shalom, there were many gods, no. But any denial in some fundamental characteristic of the Rabbeinu Shlom is a Minus of some sort. And that's what Chazal mean, that his fundamental conflict was the conflict of a Minus, and the fundamental conflict of all men, since Adam Rishon was the prototype, is always a fundamental idea of Minus. That's what it's meant by Adam Rishon Min Hoya. The next question of how does the Yetzirah, how did the Yetzirah tempt him? Well, the Yetzirah tempted him, of course, by telling him, you see that tree can work miracles for you. And of course, we all know, as we'll see, that the tree was completely powerless to do what the Yetzirah said it could do. The Yetzirah tempted Adam Rishon and first Chava by saying that you're seeking a certain desire to become like God, right? I will give you the wherewithal. I will show you how you can do it. That you can actually become an independent being equal to the Rabbeinu Shlom. There was Adam Rishon had that taiva, that urge, those needs and drives. And there's Yetzirah in the form of the Nachash, says, I'll show you how you can do it. So therefore he was inclining him, he was showing him, I've got the answer for what you want. If you eat from this tree, you will be able to become what you want to become. And that is an equal to the Rabbeinu Shlom. That's where the Yetzirah told him, okay? And the question was, the way the Yetzirah tells Adam Rishon, what tempted him, is that the way he tempts everybody? And the answer is yes. Everybody has a drive to equal God. Man is born feeling omnipotent, warring with God, always trying to assert himself. So the Yetzirah says, look, I'll show you how you can do those things. And if you recall, he gives you four different things. He gives you the urge for pleasure, the urge for productivity, the urge for power, and the urge for potency, as if you recall all the shurim on the Yetzirah. And he says those are the means by which you can establish a sense of self, a feeling of self, and therefore you can truly believe you're somebody. Now, this is the way the Yetzirah tempted Adam, and the truth is that this is the way it tempts all people. Just like the Eitz Hadas Tevara is powerless really to do that, it's an illusion. There was nothing in the Eitz Hadas Tevara that could give Adam Rishon those powers at all. It was merely placed there as an Nisoyon that he should overcome. The Yetzirah does the same thing. He says, look, if you go to war with other nations and you achieve power, that proves that you're somebody. If you build great buildings, achievement, that proves you're somebody. If you exercise your being and experience pleasure, that proves you're somebody. If you have a lot of wealth, and therefore that proves that you can do anything you want. He does the same thing, but the truth is it's all illusions. It proves you nothing, because the one who gives you the ability to do all those things in the first place is the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, only the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you the ability to us sachar hazeh. Only Ribbono Shel Olam gives you the hatzloch and the ability. So just like the Sitra Achor in the form of the Nochosh approached, or the Yetzer Hara approached Adam and said, you can be an independent rival and equal to God by this method called a tree. He does that with us also. You can be a rival to God, you can have a sense of self and a sense of tremendous feelings of omnipotence and being by doing these methods. But just like the tree was an illusion that it wasn't anything that could provide Adam with a sense of self, the same thing, all these ways, the urges that the Sitra Achor gives you, is also an illusion. It also provides you with nothing. Because in the end, you're still the nothing that you were in the beginning. Because if a person would be able to prove himself that he was somebody by conquest, then he wouldn't have to conquer all the time. If Alexander the Great could have realized that, he wouldn't have to conquer the whole world in order that he should get a sense of power. Because the truth is that all those methods are illusions. They give you nothing. They give you a temporary sense of self, and then you're not sure again, and you go back and do it right over again, because you're really never sure. And the answer why you're never sure is because it really gives you nothing. Somehow intrinsically you know that it can give you nothing. It doesn't give you a sense of self that you really need. So we see how the Yetzer Hara as a Nochash addressed himself to Adam and Chava, and we see also that the same way he fools them, he fools us all the time, by giving us methods or mediums or means which are intrinsically worthless to get what he's trying for us to achieve, and that is a sense of self. The next question, what exactly was this das of Teva Ra that Adam had after the Chet and he didn't have before? And the answer to that is that what he experienced after the Chet, which he did not experience before, was an actual feeling that he was somebody. He experienced the illusion that he was somebody. And that is Ra. That is what evil is. Evil is when you experience an untruth. And the untruth, of course, was that Einig Mavade, now he experienced Yeshid Mavade in a real feeling. That was the Ra that he experienced. That was different than what he had before. He'd never experienced that before. Before the Chet, he was trying to get that feeling, or trying to assert himself. After the tree, he actually felt like he was somebody, because he did the Chet. So that's the Das Teva Ra, the real feeling of being that one gets from doing the Chet. He actually experienced that. Now, how does the tree give this Das of Teva Ra? And the answer to that is what Rav Pinchas Ben Yoyah said, that the tree itself was intrinsically powerless to do that. It had no power to give Das Teva Ra. It was called, when the Ribbono Shel Olam commanded Adam not to eat, the reason why it was called the Eitz Hadas Teva Ra was Al Shem HaOsed, that if you eat from this tree, externally you will get these feelings. But how did he get it? Not because the tree would give you those feelings. The answer is because the Merida, the rebellion, is what gave him those feelings. The fact that Adam believed himself to be an independent individual besides the Ribbono Shel Olam, therefore he could eat from the tree that God said not to eat from. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him that feeling that he thought he was. You thought you're somebody, you will have the feeling you're somebody. And that is exactly how the Ribbono Shel Olam hides himself from an individual. How he's mitzamtzem himself and hides his Einoi Mavadoi by you feeling that you are somebody. So it was the Merida, the rebellion, that gave Adam Rishon the feeling that he was somebody, since that's why he ate the tree in the first place, because he thought he was somebody. So then he felt like he was somebody, and that Merida, that rebellion, is what gave him the feeling that he is somebody. And that feeling that he got came about because the Ribbono Shel Olam was Mast Yechudoi as a result of his Chet. He hid himself. God said, in other words, that since you believe you're somebody, I will leave you and conceal myself more. And the Ribbono Shel Olam conceals his unity by giving you a feeling that you're somebody. So because he rebelled, he got that feeling, because when the Ribbono Shel Olam left him, that's exactly what he experienced, was a sense of self in response to the fact that he was married. So it had nothing to do with the intrinsic value of the tree, it was the external, the merida, the rebellion itself, that caused him to feel a sense of self, because the version was masti yechudoi, as mida keneged mida. Now, the last question is, how do we see the entire psychological apparatus manifested in Adam Rishon and the entire creation? Well, we see all the necessary requirements. And remember, I had mentioned six, that first there has to be an Adam, and he was Adam Rishon. Then there has to be a matzav nisoyen, a matzav chesaron, a state of deficiency, and there was. There was God hid himself sufficiently for Adam Rishon to be tested. God somehow hid some aspect of himself, or else Adam Rishon never would have fallen in the test and never have come to that idea that he is somebody also. So there was a Hesti Yehudai, sufficient for Adam to be tested. The task, of course, of Adam was that he should be Magal Yehudai. He should realize that it's Eined Mavadai, and that therefore he shouldn't fall into this belief that he is somebody. The emtsoi, the way that he was able to do it, was of course the mitzvah of the tree, to eat from the tree or not. This was the wherewithal by which he would recognize in experience that the Ribbono Shel Olam was the only thing that is, and therefore right after he would withstand the nisoyin until Shabbos. He was only supposed to withstand the nisoyin until Shabbos. Had he not eaten from the tree, then Olam Haba would have been on Shabbos. And this whole 6,000 years of incredible difficulties and so on would never have materialized. So therefore, he had that nisoyin and he had the wherewithal. He had the mitzvah. This was going to give him the hasaga of Einay Mavadoi or the chet of Yeshay Mavadoi. Besides the emtsoi, he also had bechira. Adam Rishon could choose which direction he would take. And besides the bechira, Adam Rishon had a yetzahar and a yetzatoy, as we see from the Chumash. So Adam Rishon had all the necessary requirements for Olam Haba, Olam Hazemin, in order to bring him to that Nisayan, and if he would have withstood the Nisayan, the temptation, he would then get Olam Haba, and mankind would have achieved its perfection immediately. However, since he wasn't, he chose evil, therefore everything, of course, turned the opposite way. Now, where do we see the psychological structure which I have spoken about manifested in Adam? Well, we see it. Adam Rishon had a taiva to assert himself, to believe in himself, to feel a certain sense of self, independent, to rival God. And the Nochash, who knew that, addressed himself to that need or urge in Adam Rishon. And what the Nochash did is he pointed the way that he could do it. So we see the ideas that, which I discussed before, that the need for self-worth, which is fundamental to all human beings, is nothing more than that drive which gets you to want to assert yourself, to confirm yourself. Then that's the fundamental drive. You have the Yetzirah who addresses itself to that drive to give you different ways of doing it. The Yetzirah, which is the hasaga and the desire to know truth, value truth, and to live in accordance with that, Adam Rishon also had. So therefore we see that the entire psychological apparatus, all the needs, the different manifestations of Yetzirah and Yetzirah in the Adam, all the different urges, needs in the Adam, was actually existed in Adam Rishon in order to allow him to be put in that position of being tested. So therefore we see that Adam Rishon was the perfect model that had all the requirements in order to be put in that position of being tested or not. And that's exactly what he was given the test. So these are the different questions with additions of some, and also the clear answers that have come out of the Shurim, last week's Shurim and the previous Shurim. Since I'm talking about Yetzirah, I want to bring one more Chazal, which is a very difficult Chazal to understand. And the truth is, if you look at the Mephoshim, somehow one doesn't feel that they really answered it. You know, it seems to still be very difficult. Chazal say that it says in Kriya Shema that you have to say Makacha b'chol levavcho b'chol nafshcho. So Chazal say in the Mishnah is in Brachos b'chol levavcho. There's two bays b'shnei yitzrecho. You're supposed to love God with both yetzes, the yetzer hara and the yetzer tov. That's how you're supposed to love God. Now, that's a very difficult Chazal to understand. What do you mean you love God with the yetzer hara and yetzer tov? I can understand you love him with the yetzer tov, because he's always getting you in the direction of believing in God and doing the mitzvahs and so on. how in the world do you love God or worship the Ribbono Shel Olam with the Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer Hara is there only to get you away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what does that mean, that you're supposed to serve God with the Yetzer Hara? You serve God with Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Hara gets you not to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, I'm unfortunate to try to give answers, but it's difficult to really understand. It's not satisfactorily dealt with. I'd like to just give, attempt to give an answer, just based on certain principles that we know before. If you recall, the Yetzer Hara gets or tries to get a person to believe in himself by offering him different directions, right? The urge of pleasure, correct? The urge of productivity, that man should get a sense of achievement, thereby getting a sense of self. Pleasure by exercising his being, getting a sense of self. By possessions, by getting or exercising power, again getting a sense of self. And by accumulating wealth, man derives also a sense of potency. He feels they can do anything because he's got so much money in the bank. But what does the Yetzer Hara do with those urges? He wants you to do those urges in order that you should get a sense of self and believe that you're somebody, right? But wait a minute. We could take those same urges and not go in the direction of self, but go in the direction of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And how will it look? Well, if somebody takes the urge, for instance, of power and mastery, right? Then let him conquer the Yetzer Hara. Let him become a power. That's the urge where you desire to conquer, to master, in order to get a sense of self. Let him conquer the Yetzer Hara. Eze Giba Akirush Yitzroy. And of course, if he conquers the Yetzer Hara, then he will get a sense of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. But in other words, what the Yetzer Hara does is he gives you those urges to go in a certain direction, a belief of self. Use the same Yetzer Hara, the urges that he gives you, but don't reach the conclusions he wants you to reach. Use the same urges and reach another conclusion. And what are the urges of the Yetzer Hara? And I mentioned four. The urge, for instance, power and mastery. Don't achieve power and mastery in possessions and get and reach the conclusion that you're somebody. Biminat Seach. Get a certain amount of, or conquer the Yetzer Hara. The fact that the Yetzer Hara wants you to reach certain conclusions, and if you conquer the Yetzer Hara and you go in the direction of the Yetzer Tov, you will reach the conclusion of Einid Mavadoi. In other words, use his urge, but don't reach the conclusions he wants you to reach. Use his urge that you want to have power over others, so have power over the Sitra Achra, the Yetzer Hara. And the conclusion, of course, you reach is the opposite, Einid Mavadoi. The idea of achievement, productivity, again, use the urge of productivity that he gives you, but not to, again, to have the feeling of achievement, and therefore you feel like you're somebody. Use the feeling of productivity by reaching the state of Kedusha, a certain level that a Jew is supposed to reach, Kedusha, okay? That a person, a tzaddik, that if you reach that level of achievement, then you will get a sense of not self, but a sense of Einid Mavadoi. So again, use the urge of productivity, achievement, but what you should achieve is not to get a sense of self. What you should, your sense of achievement should be the achievement of reaching the Madriga of Tzaddik, that same urge. But don't achieve wasteful things or meaningless things. Achieve becoming an Oved, a Tzaddik. And if you achieve that, then again you come to that Sog of Einud Mavadoi. Again, contrary to the conclusion that the Yetzer Hara wants to give you. The drive for pleasure. Don't immerse yourself in this world and get the drive for pleasure, or rather experience pleasurable things. Try to experience, if you have an urge for pleasure, then experience the pleasure of Ruchni, of Dvekus. What it means to be close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That spiritual pleasure, contentment. Let that pleasure satisfy your urge for pleasure. And of course, the conclusion you reach will be Einid Mavadoi. In other words, you're using what he's giving you, but you're reaching a different conclusion. You have an urge for pleasure, so then get pleasure of Vekas. You have an urge for achievement, so then get the achievement of being a tzaddik, kodesh. You have an urge for power, so then beat him, master him. You have an urge for potency, the feeling that you can do something. Well, if you can beat the Yetzirah and achieve the level of Kedusha and Tzidkus, then that is the greatest potency of all. And you really, you have done it. Not, you have done something which you truly have caused. Because in that area you have Bechira, and you get a tremendous, somebody who beats the Yetzirah, who has power over himself, if he can do that, he can do anything. Because he truly did that. That is his real, he truly caused that effect of being a tzaddik. So in other words, you beat the Yetzirah at his own game. Use his urges to reach the opposite conclusion, not the conclusion he wants to reach of Yeshe Milvadoi, because that's what he wants. He wants to use those urges and pursue pleasure, possessions, money, achievement, like building up great businesses and so on. That's what he wanted to do. So take those urges, pleasure, productivity, power and potency, and you go in the other direction. Get the pleasure of Dvekis, the achievement of Tzidkus, the power over the Yetzirah, and the potency knowing that you have truly done that, and you will have reached another conclusion. Ein Eid Mavadai. So Chazal are very right. Serve the Rebbeinu Shlom with both Yetzirahs, the Yetzirah and the Yetzir Tov. Serve him with the Yetzir Tov because obviously that's what he wants you to believe. And serve him with the Yetzirah, but not don't reach the conclusion the Yetzirah wants to get you to believe, but use those very urges which he's trying to get you to follow to reach that false conclusion. You use those urges, those needs that you have to vanquish the Yetzirah, to become a tzaddik, to get the pleasure of the Vekas, and to know that you did it. So therefore you fulfilled your urges, because if you have an urge you want to fulfill them, and you've reached the opposite conclusions. So therefore, you have served the Rebbeinu Shlom with the Yetzirah, as well as the Yetzirah. So we are now up to Adam Rishon after the Chet. And the question, of course, now is, what resulted in the fact that we had a Chet by Adam Rishon? What are the different things that happened? And of course, we all know that the universe had profound changes, both in man and in his environment. Many different things changed. And what we really have to do now is go into some of those changes in our quest to know the entire design of the Bria. Because obviously, after Adam changed, we now resemble that change much more than we resembled him before the change. And it'll give us a much greater insight into who we are, what we are, why we are, where we are, after we realize what happened in the Chet. So those fundamental changes are really fundamental changes that continue up to the present. Now, the question, of course, is what changed after Adam Rishon did the Chet? Well, there are many things that changed, many fundamental ideas. The first thing that changed, and I had mentioned this previously, but since we are now at the proper place, I'll mention again. The Rebbeinu Shlom immediately countered Adam Rishon, and he said to him, did you eat from that tree that I told you not to eat? And Adam Rishon, of course, said, I did. And Chava that you gave to be with me and so on, which he said. So the Rebbeinu Shlom then, of course, punished everybody involved. And he said to Adam Rishon, "Bezeh sapecha tricha lechem. In the sweat of your brow, you will eat bread." He said, now, in order for you to eat bread, in order for you to get a panasa, you now have to work for it. No more free things. This isn't this is no more paradise where everything is free, okay? Now you have to work for it. Now most people think that that was an einish, or rather that the einish was that until now you got everything free, you didn't have to work, and now you're going to have to work for your living. No, the answer is not true. That's not what the Rebbeinu Shlom told Adam Rishon. The Rebbeinu Shlom didn't give him 39 makas. That's not the form of punishment that the Rebbeinu Shlom took. The form of punishment that the Rebbeinu Shlom took is far more profound. And it's the most fundamental principle of history, which I had gone into quite a while back. And that is, what the Rebbeinu Shlom said to him is that, look, until now you were in a certain test situation, correct? In other words, the Rebbeinu Shlom said, I concealed myself sufficiently that you should be able to be tested. Ein Eid Mavadai or Yesh Eid Mavadai, right? So obviously God has to hide himself to a certain extent. Because if God manifests himself completely, nobody's going to do a chet. It's so obvious. what the real direction is. So the Rosh Hashanah hid himself sufficient for Adam Rishon to be fooled. Now, so the Rosh Hashanah says, look, until now I hid myself a very small amount, let's say 5%. And you had to choose in that 5% of my concealment, Einav Mavado or Yeshim Mavado. Now that you did the chet, and you believe you're somebody, so the midah connected midah is that God hides himself more. And if you want to now have a second test, right, it now justice demands that if you get a second test, it should be harder than the first. Because you are now responsible for the difficulty of the second test. When the Rabban Ashram made the test, God was the cause of the evil that was found in the universe and the concealment of himself. And he did that because he wanted to put Adam in that matzah. So who is responsible for the deficiency and the evil found in the universe? The Rabban Ashram, not Adam. Adam Rishon did the chet, so all of a sudden he came out with the belief that he was somebody. So he now was responsible for evil coming into the universe, or for that belief coming into the universe. In other words, when he said that I am somebody, the Rabban Ashram concealed himself much more in response, midah connected midah. And the Rabban Ashram said to him, even though I now give you a second test, however, that test must be harder, because justice demands that if you fail the first test, then since you caused the difficulty of the second test, therefore it is much harder, obviously, for Adam Rishon to do. So therefore, the second time around, the second test was a moedig chesed of the Rabban Ashram, kindness in that he allowed Adam Rishon to keep going. Because the idea is that if Adam Rishon failed the first test, then why bother with the second test? Man was given his chance, right? He failed. That's the end of the Bria. But what the Rabban Ashram did is he exercised a midah of chesed again and said that even though man does not deserve a second test, because what is this? Another time and another time? I mean, it's like, you take an exam and you fail. Okay, we'll give you another exam. You pass again. Of course, eventually you may pass. I mean, what kind of position is that? So the truth is that finality of chet should have really destroyed the Bria. But the Rabban Ashram was maschasid with Adam Rishon. He said, I'll give you a second chance. But that second chance has to be fair. It cannot be like the first chance, where there was only a minimum amount of evil, so Adam Rishon should be boicha. Midah connected midah, you believe you're somebody, therefore God says he will conceal himself more. Therefore, the second test situation is now much more difficult than the first test. So the chesed of the Rabban Ashram is that there should be a second test, okay? But that test, in order to conform to Yoshe, justice, Midas HaMishpat, Midas HaDin, becomes much harder, okay? So Rabban Ashram allowed Adam Rishon to have a second test, but now it's much more difficult. Since he himself was responsible for making it more difficult, for concealing the Rabban Ashram in the Bria. Now, where do we see that it became more difficult? And that's what Adam is. We see that when the Rabban Ashram said to Adam, "Bezeis apecha doich alechem." Until now, it was much easier for you to see who the true cause of everything is, because you came at the end. You knew that you didn't put this whole Gan Eden, into place. You knew that it was me. So it was much easier for you to realize that I am the true cause. Since, however, you believe now that you're a cause because you did the chet, midah keneged midah, I will allow food only to come in response to your actions. So it will look as if you're a cause. In other words, what the Rabban Ashram gave Adam Rishon is the illusion of causality. The Rabban Ashram makes food come only in response to Adam's efforts, so it looks like Adam is the cause. And now Adam has to dispel that illusion. So obviously it's much harder. It is now much harder for Adam Rishon to see the yichud of the Rabban Ashram, because he is now being given an illusion of causality, as if he really is the boss. Because of Horaya, food is only coming when I work, so obviously I'm the cause. So the Rabban Ashram made the test harder. How? By giving him the illusion of causality, which means that it's much harder now for Adam Rishon to pass the test and to see Einoid Mavadai. So the fundamental idea, the change that came about in the Bria, the first fundamental change, number one, is that the Rebbeinu Shlom gave him a second chance, but that second chance was much harder because it was response to his own actions, Mida Keneged Mida. And the way that action manifested itself was Bezeach Sa'apecha Teich Alechem, that Adam now had the illusion of causality, which is much more difficult to dispel than he had previously. And that is really the fundamental principle of all history, that every time a person does something, a chet, and again he believes Yeshu'id Mevadei, the Rebbeinu Shlom makes the universe or history, he gives success to all those different kinds of events and movements that make it appear as if God has nothing to do with the Bria, as if God does not exist. Man keeps creating greater and greater illusions in the world. That's the fundamental process of history. That every time an Adam does a chet, somehow he creates a greater illusion in the Bria of Yeshed Mavadai. And that's Mida Keneged Mida. That's what Adam Rishon realized by Bezeh Sapecha Teich Alechem. But in any case, Bezeh Sapecha Teich Alechem means that there is now greater concealment of the Rebbeinu Shlom, and that the Yetzirah is much more powerful. Because that's every time you have a greater concealment, a greater hester, the Sitra Achra has much greater power to fool you into believing that you're somebody. That's the again, one of the profound changes that happened in the Bria as a result of the Chet. Now, the second thing is that Adam Rishon now felt like somebody. There was a feeling of Yeshu'id Mavadoi. There was a das of Tov and Ra, which he did not have previously. And remember, that das of Tov and Ra is nothing more than the way the Rebbeinu Shlom hides himself. God hides himself from you by giving you the feeling that you're somebody. Memeli, you're not maka the emes. You're not maka the Rebbeinu Shlom. That feeling is the worst thing to have. Like it says in Chazal, it says in the Gemara, the Rebbeinu Shlom did not find a better state for Klal Yisrael than poverty. Anius, what does that mean? The Rebbeinu Shlom has not found a better matzah for Klal Yisrael, a better situation for Klal Yisrael than poverty. And the answer is because if you're a poor man, you're not going to make the mistake that you're somebody. Because your situation shows it to you all the time. Obviously, it shows your limitations. But if you're a rich man, it's much easier to fall. So the truth is that the best condition that a person can be is a condition which will not fool him so many times. And poverty is better off than, of course, wealth. So that's what the Chazal mean, that the version for clients, well, it's much better really for Yidin to be poor, because they won't make that error that they're somebodies. They won't become bagaivas than if they're rich. It's the same idea here, that Adam Rishon now had the feeling that he was somebody, and that feeling was given to him in order that the Rishon hides. But that's Ra, that's evil. Because that's going to make him do a lot of more chatoim. It's going to be much harder for him to dispel that feeling that he feels like somebody. It's much harder to come to the emes. So that's the next major thing that Adam Rishon had. Now, there are also other things that happen. The third thing that happened is that the Yetzirah, which was previously external, now became internalized. The Yetzer was external to the Adam in the form of a Nohash. He could not influence the physical body in the sense that he was not internal. As a result of the fact that the Yetzer entered man, because what happened? Adam Rishon felt like he was somebody, which is nothing more, right, than the Rebbeinu Shlom hiding himself. And now Adam Rishon is having that feeling of Yesh Oid Mevadai, and the Yetzer is therefore enters the human body. So the Yetzer is now inside the human body, not outside the human body. Previously, it was possible to run away from the Nachash. The Yetzer is outside the body, you can run away from the Nachash, and that's the end of the Yetzer. Once the Yetzer became internal as a result of the Chet, it was mezdabit to the body. The Yetzer now had complete control over the physical body. So therefore, you cannot run, obviously, away from the Yetzer. You take him along wherever you go. You always have the same urges, the same beliefs of self you carried around. So the third idea of which happened is that the Yetzer became internalized in the Adam. He now carries around the Yetzer wherever he goes. evil now was mizdabek, clings to man internally, not externally. In other words, the Yetzer now becomes part of the psychic apparatus of man. He now, whatever that psychological apparatus is, he now is inside the individual, giving him all those urges and pleasure drives and so on and so forth. This was the third idea that happened. And next week we'll continue on the different things that have results, repercussions of the Chet of Adam Rishon. So therefore, we're going to continue now with Adam Rishon. As I mentioned last week, when we think of mankind, we have to think of mankind at two different points of creation. One is before Adam Rishon did the Chet, and the other is after Adam Rishon did the Chet. Because man and his world drastically changed after Adam Rishon did the Avera. Getting back to the idea of Adam Rishon, after he did the Chet, as I mentioned, many things happened of great consequence, of course, to mankind. Now, I had mentioned a couple of the ideas last week, but I'll just go over them very rapidly. The first idea, or the first thing that happened, was that man was given a second chance. Now, as you recall, the whole idea was that Adam Rishon would do the mitzvah or not do the mitzvah. This was the whole point of creation. And if he would do this mitzvah of not eating from the tree of good, of knowledge and tree of evil and good, good and evil, if he would not eat from this tree for several hours until the end of the sixth day, he would have ushered in Olam Haba. And that would be really the end of mankind in the sense of this entire 6,000 year period as we know it. However, Adam Rishon did not do that. He did eat from the tree, and therefore he changed or altered a great deal of what was to be. Now, logically, we can ask, if a person has to take a test and he fails it, that's the end of it. He was given an opportunity, he failed the test, that's the end of the experiment called man. However, the Ribbono Shel'olam decided to continue the experiment, because first and foremost, the Ribbono Shel'olam is a Baal Chesed. In other words, the Ribbono Shel'olam wants mankind to earn reward and get Olam Haba. It's akin to the father, let's say, who has $500 million and he wants to give it to his son, but he doesn't want to give it to his son for free, because then the son will not appreciate the value. So what he does is for his son's sake, not for his, he makes him work for it. So the son will appreciate the value of what he's giving him. But what happens if the son doesn't want to work? He goofs off, he fools around. Who has a greater need? The father has a tremendous need to give his son the money, because what he's not interested in keeping $500 million. He wants his son to have a great deal of the reward because he loves his son. So therefore he's going to devise a way that he'll get his son, he'll give his son a second opportunity to work. It's the same idea. The Ribbono Shel'olam, who loves mankind, will not accept the fact that man has failed the first time around. So therefore what he'll do, because he loves mankind and he's a tremendous Baal Chesed, therefore he will allow man a second opportunity to get reward. However, the second opportunity now takes on a different form. Because in the beginning of the world, the universe had the sufficient conditions whereby man could be tested and he could either pass or fail. Since, however, man failed, therefore justice dictates that the second opportunity must be more difficult than the first. You want a second chance? Okay. But it cannot be the same kind of test that you had the first time. The test now becomes harder. The second idea, reason why the test has become more difficult, is that man himself has contributed to the additional evil in the universe. Since man has sinned, he has increased the power of evil in the universe, so then man must be tested in that situation which he himself created. So therefore, these two ideas dictate, or justice dictates, that he, if he be tested at all, which is what kindness dictates, but justice says, okay, if you want to test him, that's up to you. You're a Baal Chesed, you're a founder to mankind, okay. But justice dictates that the second test will be harder. So therefore, the test has therefore become harder. This is one of the conclusions or results of man's chet. The second idea, which I had mentioned last week, which is very fundamental and an incredibly important yesod, is that when man does a sin, what he does is he increases the concealment of God in the universe. Because if you remember, when a person does an avera, a chet, a sin, what he is really saying is that I will do what I want to do and not what God wants me to do. Therefore, he is saying in effect that I am somebody independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam also. So what God said is mida keneged mida, measure for measure. If you feel that you're somebody and therefore you did a sin, I will remove my presence even more and you will even be fooled more into thinking you're somebody. In other words, the conclusions of man's act or testimony that he feels he's somebody because he did what he wanted to do, namely go keneged the will of God. So God reacts measure for measure. You feel you're somebody, I will remove my presence and the illusion that you're somebody will be even greater to you. So it's going to be harder for yourself to dispel that illusion that you're really nothing. Okay, so therefore, the consequences of man's chet was the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, hid himself further from the universe. And I had mentioned how, b'zeh sapecha tochal lechem, when God cursed man and he said, in the sweat of your brow you will eat bread, God was not saying to man, until now you had a free trip, you had Gan Eden where you could pull the apples off and eat what you want. What the Ribbono Shel Olam was saying to him is that, until now, the whole purpose of man's conflict is to see really the own inability of his own power, that God is a source of all. However, man refused to see that, Adam refused to see that, so what the Ribbono Shel Olam did is he increased the illusion of causality. So he said, from now on, your parnosa, the produce of the earth will only come as a result of your efforts. So it will look as if your efforts actually produced these produce. So therefore, the illusion of causality was created. So now it's much harder for a person to see that he is not that which controls his own livelihood, that it's really the Ribbono Shel Olam. But again, that principle of b'zeh sapecha tocha lechem, in the sweat of your brow you will eat bread, means that God conceals himself even further. In other words, he conceals the fact that he is the source of all creation and the source of all power by giving man the illusion of causality. By making man work for his bread, man now thinks that he earns his bread because of his own efforts. And of course, that's an illusion. And he's got to dispel that, he's got to break through that illusion. So therefore, man, by his avera, created the circumstances whereby he is now under a greater illusion. And I had mentioned that this is very important because the fundamental determining principle of all history is not what the historians think, that there are military causes or economic causes or political causes or whatever. What determines the events of history is how, in this particular case, Jews behave when they're tested. Every time a Jew does a chet, what it does is God conceals more of himself, which means that he gives success to whatever endeavors are going on in the world that want to destroy the Ribbono Shel Olam. For instance, you had the rise of major religions was given success because the Jews refused to acknowledge the Ribbono Shel Olam. They kept doing sins. So therefore, the illusion that there are other gods besides the Ribbono Shel Olam was given success. It's a measure for measure. And that is basically the fundamental operating principle of history. Man causes history to develop. Man does not find himself in a historical situation. He creates his own history every time he does a chet. The Ribbono Shel Olam removes himself further from the Bria, giving historical events which want to go against belief in God success. That's the way history performs. Now, the third idea is that man actually had a sense of self, which he never had before. This was the ra, or the evil, that man tasted. In other words, after doing the sin and eating from the tree, man now felt like somebody, and that is evil in itself, because it's a false feeling. That man feels like he's somebody independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam is really a false feeling. And man had this. This was the, when we talk about the tree of knowledge of good and evil, this is the evil that he now acquired after he ate from that tree. He actually felt as if he was somebody. And since that's contrary to reality, that is the definition of evil, that which is contrary to the reality of the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam is really the only one who's the source of everything. So that's the third idea. The fourth idea, what changed radically, is that until then the Yetzirah, or the evil inclination, was external to man in the form of a snake. And therefore, of course, man could escape it. What happened now as a result of the fact that man increased or he did a sin, what happened was that the Yetzirah became internal. It now went into the psyche of man and now can manipulate or have control over the human body in many different urges and many different ways. So the Yetzirah became internalized. You can escape it now. Wherever you go, you drag it along with you. So in other words, the concept that evil now clings to the body of man, because man allowed him entrance into his body, and that's the feeling of self that you feel, the urges that you experience, all that is really the influence of this, of the Sitra Achra, or the Malach HaMavos, or the Satan, whatever you want to call him, or the Nochesh. Before that, he now has shlita over the guf, and therefore a fourth consequence was the fact that the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, now became internal, and now evil clings to the body of man. I had gone over these 4 points last week. I now want to continue with several other points. Besides these four ideas, which was the result of the Chet, each one of course having profound influences on man. I mean, the fact that the Yetzirah is now internal reverses or changes the whole psyche, the whole psychological apparatus of man. The fact that there's an illusion of causality in the universe changes the entire external reality framework that we deal with. That unless we go in Mishtadel, unless we work for our living, we don't get anything. Because that's the illusion we must be under. We have to break that. Each one of these things has profound implications in terms of the universe. Now, a fifth idea that changed, and from it we see other very important changes, is the idea of Zikach HaGuf. Now, if you recall, I had mentioned previously that before the Neshama comes down to this earth, it is a state of dvekis to the Ribbono Shel. It is clinging to the Ribbono Shel in a certain way. And that way, of course, has tremendous pleasure. That's a great extent of what the Neshama will experience in Olam Haba. However, man was placed down on the earth to work so he can remove the embarrassment of receiving all this Tov, goodness and pleasure from the Ribbono Shel for free. There's a tremendous sense of embarrassment and loss of self-respect when you receive something for nothing, and if it goes on for eternity, then it's really bad news in that sense. So what the Ribbono Shel did is he wants you to earn that reward, so therefore you will not have this sense of embarrassment or loss of self-respect when he gives the reward. So he wants man to earn or to be responsible for the reward that he gets. So therefore, he took the neshama and placed it into a human body. As a result of that, the original state of dvekus, of intimacy with the Ribbono Shel Olam, was lost, because the body is a barrier to the neshama's, the soul's being intimate or close with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a barrier. Now, the neshama, by its very nature, has the power to take the body, which is physical, and to refine the physical substance of the body and sort of almost like make the body glass. And we've never seen it done. And it wasn't done, because this is what happened with Adam Rishon. But in any case, what was the power of the Neshama? The Neshama has the power. It's such a strong spiritual entity that if you put a barrier between it and the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Neshama immediately breaks the barrier. That's how powerful it is. And in the case of the human body, what it would have done is it would take the human body and immediately dissolve the physical substance of the body, and the guf, the body, would then resemble almost like a glass suit, where you see the neshama. If you look at the individual, you see the soul right through that glass suit. The body is almost disappearing in that sense. It's still there, but it has lost its complete ability or physical substance, which is the barrier between the neshama and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Ribbono Shel Olam takes the neshama and puts it into this guf because he wants man to work for his reward. But of course, what the Ribbono Shel Olam did is he denied the neshama the power of taking the physical substance and purifying it. This property or operation called Zikuch HaGuf, which means to purify the body, was denied to the neshama. And that is indicated when the Rebbe Yishlam told the moon, L'chi umati is atzmeich, go and diminish yourself. He told the moon to diminish itself, and only the sun should rule. That alludes to the fact that the Rebbe Yishlam told the neshama, go and diminish yourself. Means you've got to be in this prison, this human body, trying to break out, but you can't. So in other words, there's a divine decree that does not allow the neshama to do what it normally could, and that is to purify the body. Now, originally, what should have been is that Adam Rishon should have done the mitzvah, the commandment, not eaten from the tree, and what would have transpired is that the neshama of Adam Rishon would have completely purified his body. His body would have taken on this whatever glass kind of appearance. It doesn't mean literal, it's the best way I can describe it, because nobody knows exactly what that means when you pure transparency, when you purify a body. But Adam Rishon would have done that, and he would have gotten Olam Haba right then and there. And since the body is transparent, there is no barrier between the Ribono Shel Olam and the neshama. There's no obstacle anymore, because that physical substance is removed. However, when Adam Rishon did the chet, instead of doing the mitzvah, what happened is that evil or ra clings to the human body. Now, the neshama can purify a physical substance. It cannot remove evil from the body. It can only transform physical substances into such a state where it becomes transparent. However, once evil clings to the body, which was a result of the chet of Adam Rishon, the sin of Adam Rishon, it cannot transform the body anymore, or rather, it cannot purify that body. It's got to remove the evil first, and then it can purify the body. So what happened was, what God then decided to do was he created several new concepts, which was not supposed to exist. The first concept was the idea of death. The second concept was the concept called Tchiyas HaMeisim, resurrection of the dead. And the third concept was the concept called Gan Eden, Garden of Eden, or Olam HaNeshamos. Now, what does that really mean? What the Rebbe Yishlam did, since the neshama can no longer purify the body, because since evil clings to that body, what the Rebbe Yishlam decided is that man will be placed in a body that, of course, he cannot mezakech or purify this body. Man will divest himself at a future time of this body, and that is called death. Death is nothing more than the separation of the neshama and the guf. That's all it means. Man will divest himself of the physical body that he has. The body will lose its form in the earth, because that's what happens. It returns from dust, like Rebbe Yishlam told Adam Rishon, you are dust and to dust you return. So the body then returns to its former status, namely dust. It loses its surah, its form of as a human being. As a result of that, evil then leaves, or ra, or whatever manifestation that the sitra achra, the forces of evil have, they leave the body because it's no more a man. It's no more an Adam. Okay? And at a future time, the Rebbe Yishlam will give man a new body. That's Tchiyas HaMeisim. You see? So in other words, once a person could not purify his body, death was the inevitable result. Death is not a punishment. Death is the inevitable result of the fact that evil clings to the body. The soul cannot purify that body. So therefore the Rebbe Yishlam takes that body away from the neshama, and that's called death. At a future time, he will give the neshama a different body, that's called Tchiyas HaMeisim, and that body the neshama will purify. And this is really what these concepts came into being after the chet. So in other words, it was ordained that people will die, means that the neshama has to leave the body, because that body cannot be purified in any way. In addition to that, not only does the body have to return back to the earth, because it cannot be purified by the neshama, and the Rebbe Yishlam wants the body and the soul to coexist in Olam Haba. Man will exist together with his body in the future world. And not like many people think that only the souls will exist in Olam Haba in the future world. Man will exist with his body in Olam Haba. So what happens is that the neshama is separated from the body, which means that is called death. And besides the fact that there is death of the body, there's also death of the universe. Chazal say, because the universe itself cannot be transformed. Because every time a man does a mitzvah, when Adam Rishon, if he would have done the mitzvah, what would have happened is that his body would have been transformed, transparent, and the universe would have been transformed. The physicalness of the universe also would have been transformed. What happened after the chet, of course, is that neither his body nor the universe can now be changed. So therefore the neshama leaves the body dies, loses its form, evil leaves, and man will be given a new body at a certain time. That is called Tchias HaMeisim, resurrection of the dead. When the neshama enters that body again, it will then be able to purify that body because it's a new body. Chazal say in Masechta Sanhedrin that the world will last 6,000 years, and in the 7,000th years it will be destroyed. And after 7,000 years, in the 8,000th year, it will be renewed. It's the same idea. Because when the soul will purify the body, it purifies the universe at the same time. So the soul needs a new body, and it needs a new environment. It needs a new universe. And that's the meaning of that chazal, that the world must be destroyed, just like the body is destroyed, and the neshama goes back into the body, and the neshama also purifies the universe around it, which is the environment. And that purified body and that purified universe is called Olam Haba. And we have no idea of what that universe looks like or resembles. It's something beyond the state that we're in. So far we have an understanding of why there's such a thing called death, because the soul cannot purify the body, and the soul with its purified body, with the purified world, would be Olam Haba. It can't purify the body, so the body has to be removed, lose its form, evil leaves, given man, the neshama is given a new body and it gets transformed. And the world also has to get a new form. So we understand the concepts of Misa, and we also understand of both man and the world, the destruction of the universe, only to be renewed later. And we understand the idea of Tchias HaMeisim, because that's the renewal process. Now it comes out that what a person does, every time a person does a mitzvah, he cannot affect his body, which is what he could have done by Adam Rishon. What he does is that he potentially affects his body in the universe. In other words, he stores up points. It's like a generator that has a greater and greater charge. Every time you do a mitzvah, a greater charge is given to the neshama, but it can't do it to this body. You do another mitzvah, greater charge, and the neshama gets more and more powerful in the sense of being able to purify the body. But what does not allow it to purify the body is the body itself. When the neshama is given a new body, and Rabbeinu Shlom says, go and purify it, then it purifies the body in the exact amount of the mitzvahs it collected. You see? So therefore, what happens is that everybody will have different purified, that's right, different states of purified bodies, exactly. Each one's body depends on what kind of mitzvahs he did. So you'll notice then the interesting idea that emerges is that, first of all, you potentially purify the body now. You will actually purify the body when you're given a new body and a new universe, and that's Olam Haba. And the amount of mitzvahs that you do is the exact amount that you purify the body. And if you do more mitzvahs, then you can purify it more, which means that the body is less of a barrier between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. You see? So in other words, it comes out that you are responsible for the exact amount of closeness that you have to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You do more mitzvahs, it means your body, your neshama has greater power to purify the body, not now but later. And the more you purify the body, the closer you are to the Ribbono Shel Olam, because the less of a barrier it is. The less mitzvahs you do, it means that you purify the body less, even when you get a body that's purifiable, and it means you are less close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it means. So we see that Zikach HaGuf, the reason why it exists is because the body is the barrier. You purify, meaning you remove the barrier, and your ability to remove the barrier depends exactly on the amount of mitzvahs, because that's the credits or the charge, the amount of energy that you have to actually purify the body. Now, since it was ordained that man must die, be given a new body and a new universe later on, so what does the neshama do while it's out of the body and waiting, because the world continues and the people's dying every day, right? So what does the neshama do while its body has died? Therefore, the creation, therefore, a new concept was created, which is called Olam HaNeshamos. A new place was made, which called Olam HaNeshamos means the world of souls. We call it, in popular terminology, Gan Eden. That's what Gan Eden is, okay? But in any case, what it really is Olam HaNeshamos. In other words, there is a place that souls go to after the body dies, and it goes there, and it waits for the world to end or complete its course. And after it's given a new body, of course, comes back from Olam HaNeshamos back to the earth, and it arises from the dead. Now, Olam HaNeshamos is a place where souls reside, but in that place, each neshama has the exact proportion of closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam that it earned on earth. But it's still not the same as if it's in the body. In other words, the ultimate reward that every soul, neshama, gets is when it coexists together with the body in Olam Haba. However, when the soul awaits its future body, which it can purify, and it's in what's called the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls, or Gan Eden, or Elyon, that's what it's called, it enjoys or feels intimate with the Ribbono Shel Olam proportionate to the amount that it worked. But it's not the amount that it will receive in Olam Haba. Okay, so we have several concepts being created or coming into existence as a result of the Chet of Adam Rishon. Death ensues. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam told Adam that in the day you eat it, you will die, because you're not going to be able to purify that body which you have. You will have to take leave of that body and wait in the Olam HaNeshamos, which is the second concept that was created. First, death. The second is the Olam HaNeshamos Gan Eden. And then there will be Tchias HaMesim, which means you'll go back into the human body and then purify that with a new world, and that's Olam Haba. See? So several concepts were created as a result of the Chet of Adam Rishon. And these ideas, there was not supposed to be anything called Misa. The soul was never supposed to be separate from its body. Adam should have done the mitzvah. The soul would have purified the body it was in, never separating. Therefore, there would be no need for death, Gan Eden, or Tchias HaMesim. No need for any of these things if the soul never separates from the body. However, the soul, man, did a sin, and therefore all these different concepts have arisen as a result of that. Now, therefore, we now see that these concepts, the concept of Misa, the concept of Gan Eden, the concept of Tchias HaMesim, the concept of Chiddush Olam, the concept of that the world will be renewed and so on, all of these emerge as a result of the Chet of Adam Rishon. Now, I just want to mention one thing. When I mention the word death, it doesn't mean dying. It means any form of depletion of being, any form of deterioration of being is death. The fact sickness is also Misa. Any form of a deficiency or deterioration of any being whatsoever is what's meant by the idea of death. The ultimate death, of course, is separation of the neshama and the body. But what death in the total sense means, anything which negates or denies some aspect of existence. Disease is one of them. Pain is another. Any one of these ideas which somehow removes some aspect of a person in any way, deteriorates a person, is part of the idea called death. However, the simple idea, of course, Miso, the ultimate idea, is the complete separation of the Shama and body, which is the complete negation of human being. Then it's no more a human being. And a Shama by itself is not a human being. A human being is the idea which composes, which means the composite of an Shama and a Guf. That is a human being. And a body, that's right. Without a body, it's not a human being. It's a soul. It's a different kind of entity. So, we've seen that several ideas do develop. Now, since I'm talking about different time periods of Misa and so on, I would just like to mention that as a result also of these ideas, after the Chet, you have different death, and you have resurrection, and you have different things going on, man is judged at three times. Man is judged on Rosh Hashanah, he's judged after he dies, and he's judged when the universe is all over. Now, man is judged every year because depending on his actions every year, that sets up a different kind of test situation for the next year. In other words, God periodically or annually decides the structure of man's test every year. Okay? That's the first reason of judgment. That's Rosh Hashanah. The second time man is judged is after he dies. And that he's judged on the sum total of all his actions while he was alive. If he's good, if he's bad, and so on. The third time man is judged is when the universe is completely destroyed, and then everything in creation is judged. Now you'll ask me, why does he have to be judged a third time, since he was judged after he died? And that should have ended it all. And the answer to that really is obvious. What happens if a person writes a book that's full of atheistic ideas, and then he dies? So when you judge a man, you're not only going to judge him for the sins that he did, but what about all the evil influences that his book is doing while this man is dead for 1,000 years, right? Take like Freud. He wrote Moses' Monotheism, which is an incredibly atheistic book. It just picked one. Now, Freud is not going to get punished when he dies. He's going to have to wait until all the amount of people became atheists as a result of his book. He's going to collect the punishment for every single person who became an atheist. The Rebbeinu Shlom judges man at the end of mankind, at the end of the entire universe, because he is personally responsible for all the good he did through the end of time and all the evil he did through the end of time. What happens if somebody sat down with somebody made him from? And as a result of his influence, this individual is religious and his children and children all the way down. So this one man could be responsible for 14 generations of righteousness. He's got to get part of that credit also, because he influenced the first one, and so on. Therefore, man is judged actually at the end of time to completely take into account every single evil and all good that came out of his actions. And of course, you obviously have to wait until the end of time until that happens. So therefore, man again is judged these three times. Now, I just wanted to preface that when a person dies, he does not necessarily go to Gan Eden. I'm merely saying that there's a place that the soul stays until it awaits the resurrection of the dead. However, the soul may go other places depending if it did a tremendous amount of evil. Okay? If it did, and I'll just preface it one word. There are one of two places an individual winds up. Either he winds up ceasing to exist, or he winds up in Olam Haba. There's no other place. Either a person makes it to Olam Haba, or if he doesn't make it to Olam Haba, then he's Ne'evad. He ceases to exist. Cessation of existence. What does it mean when we say that a person ceases to exist even though his soul is immortal? We mean very simply that the substance of the soul is immortal. However, the fact that the substance is an individual separate from God, that is created. Okay? So when God takes away the existence of the neshama, what he does, he merely brings it back to himself, and it loses its individuality. The concept of self disappears, and the substance of the soul now becomes part of God itself. You see? So in other words, let me just continue. In other words, the neshama eventually, at the end of everything, either goes to Olam Haba or ceases to exist. And cessation of existence means that it loses the self, and therefore its chomer, whatever it's made of, goes completely back to the Rebbeinu Shlom. Now, if the Rebbeinu Shlom judges a soul that it's worthy of Olam Haba, however, the soul did evil acts while it was in the earth, so it has to be neschaper, it has to atone for these evil acts. So there are different directions in a neshama can go. One of the directions it can go is to come back to this earth. It can reincarnate. Another direction that the soul can go is that the soul can go to what's called Gehenna. And Gehenna is a spiritual process which somehow removes the influence of evil on itself and enables the neshama then to go to Gan Eden. So Gan Eden is sort of like this last stop after it's gone through all the different ways that it will remove any of the evil influences, and as a result of that, it waits until Tchisa Mesim. That's basically it. The topic is much greater, much more detail, and the topic is really for a much later discussion, way down the line. This is more or less, we've discussed several ideas, the idea of what resurrection of the dead is, Tchisa Mesim, what death is, what Gan Eden is, before it gets to Gan Eden, where it goes, the idea of the fact that the universe is renewed. These are basically very fundamental ideas about Judaism that many people do not know. What I wanted to show you is the harmony of it all, that you don't have death and Gan Eden and Chesed Mesim. What does this all have to do? But now you begin to see that all these concepts emerged logically and harmoniously after the Chet of Adam Rishon, that each, that Chet dictated these different things coming into being in order to finally complete what the entire idea of man's purpose is. Now, until now we've gone through different effects of the Chet of Adam Rishon. I want to now talk about the last effect of Adam Rishon, and that is Chet is sin. I want to now talk about the last idea, or rather that I want to talk about, because there are more, and that is the idea of the Mashiach. Now, if you recall, the Ribbono Shel Olam put in the Bria, in the universe, a certain amount of concealment of his presence, because we know that if God openly reveals his presence, then automatically you cannot do a chet. It's not possible, because it's obvious what the truth is. So God conceals a certain aspect of his presence in order that we should therefore think that we may be able to do a chet and get away with it. As a result of that, he also created an evil force to tempt man the reverse way. So we've got two ideas. Hesti Yechudoi, which means the concealment of the idea that he is one, or he is the source of all, that's what it means. And the idea of Ra, evil, which is the idea of a force that represents or tries to tempt man to sin. Now, in the beginning of time, before Adam Rishon did the Chet, while Adam Rishon was sitting there deciding if he should eat from this tree, there was a minimal amount of Hester, of concealment, of God. Just enough to give Adam that illusion that he can eat from this tree and maybe it's also not bad. Also what was present was a minimal amount of temptation. Believe it or not, Adam Rishon stood exactly in between a force of good and a force of evil. It's not like today where evil is so predominant. He was in a true balance, a shekel, a true balance between good tempting in one way, and I had gone previously what the Yetzer Tov is, what the inclination of good is, previous Shurim. In other words, he stood in that balance between the Yetzer and Yetzer Tov, the good inclination, the evil inclination. This was previous to his doing the Chet. In addition to that, before he did the Chet, the sin, who is the one who concealed, who is responsible for the concealment of God and the fact that there's an evil influence in the universe? Who is responsible for that? The Ribbono Shel Olam, not Adam. He was placed in a universe that had already, de facto, a concealment of the presence of God, an evil influence, correct? In order that he should be able to do a chet, if he so chooses. However, after the chet, what happened was that Adam believed in himself, if you recall what I had spoken last week about the whole conflict of Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon did the sin. What he was really saying with that is that I am also somebody and I can do what I want. I can do my will, not God's will. And in other words, what he was testifying is to the belief of his own independence away from God. His own independence of self as a true being distinct from God. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, God says, okay, in response to your belief, I will now conceal myself further because you believe you're somebody. I will now give you the illusion even greater that you're somebody and I will hide myself. Besides that, evil, the evil influence, the Yetzer Hara became internal. So then who was responsible for the addition of the concealment of the Ribbono Shel Olam and the increase in the amount of evil in the universe? Adam was. Not the Ribbono Shel Olam was. Adam was responsible now for an additional concealment of God's presence, as well as the addition of more evil in the universe, correct? Therefore, it is now required two levels of work, of avodah, of service. Man has to go back, man has to undo the evil that he contributed to the universe and the concealment of the presence of God that he contributed. So he has to get back to the level of Odom Rishon. And when he's back on the level of Odom Rishon, means he's now in the amount of evil and concealment that God contributed, and he's got to work himself out of that. There are not two levels. He's got to get rid of the amount of kilkel or destruction that he has contributed to the universe. And when he's gotten rid of that, he now can get rid of the final concealment and evil that God has put into the universe. So there are two levels. Because Adam did the chet, he created the second level where he contributed to a further concealment and a greater growth of evil. So therefore he's got to undo what he made, and then he's got to undo what the Rabban Shalom made. Two levels of avodah, right? Okay. Since there are two levels of avodah, right? There are two levels of work. To get rid of what we did, and then to get rid of what the Rabban Shalom did, which is the original status of Adam Rishon. Therefore, as a result of that, two purposes, the two levels, dictated two different purposes. Man has to achieve two different purposes. Now, Adam Rishon was supposed to really do several things. He was supposed to do the mitzvah, and therefore he would have been done what? He would have purified his body and the entire universe, as I had mentioned. He also would have removed evil, and he would have brought the Ribbono Shel back into the universe, and God would have then revealed himself completely, and that would have been Olam Haba. Had Adam did the mitzvah, and what he would have said, what he was really he would have declared had he done the mitzvah, is that I will do your will because you are the only one that exists and not me. By saying that kind of statement, God would have then responded the way he always responds. You say that I am the only one exists, I will respond in that direction. I will now reveal myself and you will see that I am the only one exists. God acts in response to man's action. Just like a chet, a sin, furthers God away from the universe, a mitzvah brings him back into the universe or reveals his presence even more so. So Adam Rishon, what he would have done, he would have removed evil and brought the Ribbono Shel back into the universe. And that would be Olam Haba. So it comes out that Adam Rishon, had he done the mitzvah, would have ushered in Olam Haba, which would have begun on Shabbos, the end of the sixth day. Since he failed to do that, what he then brought into concept, or rather what had to have been created, was a new idea. Adam Rishon was the first Mashiach. Now what is a Mashiach? A Mashiach means an anointed one. It comes from the Hebrew word Mashiach, to be anointed. Had Adam Rishon did the mitzvah, he would be the Mashiach, which means that he would bring back the presence of God and the Ribbono Shel Olam would be revealed throughout the Bria. No more concealment of God's presence. No more evil tempting you away from that. That would be gone. The one who does that is the Mashiach. Since Adam Rishon, if he would have done the mitzvah, would have brought the revelation of the presence of God back into the universe completely, and that's what Olam Haba is, he would have been the Mashiach. However, since he didn't do that, therefore it was necessary for it to be given to somebody else, not to Adam Rishon. You know, there's a medrash that says that Adam Rishon looked into the future and saw that Dovid HaMelech, David, the king, was going to die at birth. He was supposed to live 1,000 years. So Adam Rishon says, why is he going to die so young? Let me give him 70 of my years. So that's why Adam died at 930 years, not at 1,000. He was supposed to live one day, because God said, in the day you eat it, you will die. At the end of the day, and one day is equivalent to 1,000 years. Since Adam Rishon gave part of the day, or rather 70 years, to Dovid HaMelech, he therefore died at the age of 930. But what does that medrash really mean? Why did he give those years to Dovid? Because what is Dovid? Dovid is the forerunner of the Mashiach. What he was doing, he was giving life, or he created the concept of the Mashiach ben Dovid. That's what it means that he gave 70 years to Dovid. Because he failed to bring the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the Bria, he now had to give life to another person And he would bring the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the Bria. And it started with Dovra Melech, the kingship of Dovra Melech. And of course, the final end of that would be the Mashiach ben David. So we see that Adam Rishon is giving the ability of the Mashiach ben David to exist because he comes from Dovra Melech. Why? Because he was supposed to have done it. Now he must create the concept for somebody else to do it. And that's why he gave 70 years to Dovra Melech. Now, besides the idea of Mashiach ben David, which Adam Rishon now gave the impetus, there's another Mashiach coming, and that's the Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, most people are not familiar with the Mashiach ben Yosef. They have no idea who he is, what he is. Most people have never even heard of him, the Messiah, the son of Joseph. However, next week, I will begin going into further the entire ideas of the Mashiach and the Mashiach ben Yosef and what he's supposed to do. There's not really time now. So we'll have to wait next week for the entire presentation.